1 and verses 6 through 9. This is Joshua, or God speaking to Joshua and through Joshua to the people of Israel as they're about to enter the promised land and engage in a lengthy and difficult period of conquest. Be strong and of a good courage, for unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded thee. Turn not thou from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success. Have I not commanded thee? Be strong and of a good courage. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee, whithersoever thou goest. On this Veterans Day weekend, I'd like to take us back in time to November of 1919. World War I had ended the previous year, and President Wilson, in 1919, declared 11 November as Armistice Day, reflecting the armistice, or that is, the ending of conflict between the Allied powers and Germany. And Wilson declared in that address concerning Armistice Day, "To us in America, the reflections of Armistice Day will be filled with solemn pride in the heroism of those who died in this country's service, and with gratitude for the victory, both because of the thing from which it has freed us and because of the opportunity it has given America to show her sympathy with peace and justice in the councils of the nations." And then, years later, 1954, after World War II and after the Korean conflict, the 83rd Congress amended this earlier act to expand Armistice Day to include veterans of all wars and also those who had served in time of peace. Armistice Day was then renamed Veterans Day. And so on this day, we honor all veterans, active duty, retired, reserve, guard, the Army, the Navy, the Marines, the Air Force, the Coast Guard, Merchant Marine, and now the Space Force. Some sacrificed their lives. All were willing to do so. As we say, all gave some. Some gave all. The best definition of a veteran that I've ever heard is a person who wrote a check to the United States payable upon demand in any sum up to and including my life. General Douglas MacArthur, in his farewell address at West Point, said of the American man of arms, "My estimate of him was formed on the battlefields many, many years ago and has never changed. I regarded him then as I regard him now, as one of the world's noblest figures, not only one of the finest military characters, but also as one of the most stainless. His name and fame are the birthright of every American citizen. In his youth and strength, his love and loyalty, he gave all that morality can give. He needs no eulogy from me or from any other man. He has written his own history and written it in red upon his enemy's breast. But when I think of his patience under adversity, of his courage under fire and his modesty in victory, I am filled with an emotion of admiration I cannot put into words. He belongs to history as furnished one of the greatest examples of successful patriotism He belongs to posterity as the instructor of future generations in the principles of liberty and freedom. He belongs to the present, to us, by his virtues and by his achievements. General MacArthur continued, in 20 campaigns, on 100 battlefields, around 1,000 campfires, I have witnessed that enduring fortitude, that patriotic self-abnegation, and that invincible determination which has carved his statue in the hearts of his people. From one end of the world to the other, he has drained deep the chalice of courage. As I think in memory's eye, I can see those staggering columns of the First World War, bending under soggy packs on many a weary march, from dripping dusk to drizzling dawn, slogging ankle-deep through mire of shell-shocked roads to form grimly for the attack, blue-lipped, covered with sludge and mud, chilled by the wind and rain, driving home to their objective, and for some, to the judgment seat of God. I do not know the dignity of their birth, but I do know the glory of their death. They died unquestioningly, uncomplainingly, with faith in their hearts, and on their lips the hope that we would go on to victory. Always for them, duty, honor, country. Always their blood and sweat and tears as they saw the way and the light. And 20 years after, on the other side of the globe, against the filth of dirty foxholes, the stench of ghostly trenches, the slime of dripping dugouts, those boiling suns of the relentless heat, those torrential rains of devastating storms, the loneliness and utter desolation of jungle trails, the bitterness of long separation of those they loved and cherished, the deadly pestilence of tropic disease, the horror of stricken areas of war, their resolute and determined defense, their swift and sure attack, their indomitable purpose, their complete and decisive victory, always victory, always through the bloody haze of their last reverberating shot, the vision of gaunt, ghastly men reverently following your password, duty, honor, country. The code which these words perpetuate embraces the highest moral laws and will stand the test of any ethics or philosophies ever promulgated for the uplift of mankind. Its requirements are for the things that are right, and its restraints are from the things that are wrong. The soldier, above all other men, is required to practice that greatest act of religious training, sacrifice. In battle, and in the face of danger and death, the soldier discloses those divine attributes which his maker gave when he created man in his own image. No physical courage and no brute instinct can take the place of the divine help which alone can sustain. Moving on from MacArthur's most eloquent address, I'd like to take us to 1920. In 1920, the people of Bladensburg, Maryland, decided to honor their World War I veterans by erecting a 30-foot cross in their honor. It stood undisturbed for a century, cared for by the American Legion, until the American Humanist Association filed a lawsuit demanding that the cross be removed as a violation of the supposed First Amendment separation of church and state. The case went to the U.S. Supreme Court, where on behalf of the Foundation for Moral Law, where I serve as senior counsel, I filed an amicus brief in support of the American Legion and in support of the cross. We argued that the cross is a religious symbol, but it is more than that. Row upon rows of crosses form our military cemeteries abroad, and in military cemeteries at home, the graves are marked with religious symbols, most of them crosses. Next to the Congressional Medal of Honor, The Distinguished Service Cross is the highest medal awarded by the Army, comparable to the Navy Cross and the Air Force Cross, for the cross symbolizes sacrifice, the supreme sacrifice of Christ on the cross for our sins, and the lesser sacrifice of those who have given their lives in the service of their country. As Jesus said, "Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends." And in a 7-2 decision, the Supreme Court agreed that the Bladensburg Cross is not an establishment of religion, and it remains standing today. On Memorial Day weekend of 2012, I conducted a military funeral in the Black Hills National Cemetery of South Dakota for my last surviving uncle, Major Sheldon S. Coe, age 95. As a child, I'd always liked Uncle Sheldon. He was kind to me. He always laughed at my jokes, which I consider a mark of intelligence. But my dad used to tell me that Sheldon had been a hero, because years earlier, he'd been on some kind of march. It was called the Bataan Death March. As a child, I really didn't understand what it was. I understand it better now, although probably no one who wasn't there can fully understand it. Sheldon was one of those 12,000 U.S. POWs who, along with some 66,000 Filipino soldiers, the exact numbers estimates vary considerably, endured the six-day, 65-mile Bataan Death March, captured by the Japanese, taken to prison camp. They were already weakened by hunger and disease, and they were brutalized throughout the march. Those who could not keep up were summarily shot or bayoneted. Some were dragged behind trucks by a rope around their necks. Prisoners could be shot simply for asking for food or water. Then when they reached San Fernando, they were packed into boxcars so tightly that they could not sit down. They were transported to Capas and then marched 7 miles to the prison camp. There at the camp, the treatment was ghastly. Starvation rations consisted of often rotten food, 45 days at a time without a change of clothing, waiting in line 6 to 10 hours to get a drink. Men shrank from 200 pounds to 90 pounds and tried to supplement their diet by catching rats and mice. One survivor described being awakened one night by two prisoners arguing over how to divide a snake. Those sent out on work details were regularly whipped and beaten. Red Cross medical supplies were often left unopened. By the end of the war, 1945, about 43% of these soldiers had died, either on the march or in the railroad cars or in the prison camps. And we honor these men and countless like them in this war and in others for their heroic and supreme sacrifice. But my Uncle Sheldon survived. He suffered like the others, was transferred from camp to camp, was finally liberated in Manchuria. He returned home. He raised a family, started a business, and with millions of other veterans, he rebuilt America. So it is entirely proper that we honor him and honor all those who have served and are still serving here in this worship service today. We honor some for making the ultimate sacrifice. We honor others for the sacrifices they made and for being willing to make the ultimate sacrifice, and for making sacrifices that require equal courage. Now, I could regale you with tales of my own military heroism, but I doubt you'd be very impressed with these. As an Air Force judge advocate, all of my heroism was either behind a desk or in a military courtroom, sort of like the quartermaster, the drill instructor, the chaplain, the medic, the mechanic. Some of these services were not as spectacular. Some may not have been as heroic. But all were honorable. And all were necessary for victory in war. And their service continues, and the sacrifice goes on. Our Lord warned us in Matthew 24:6 that there will be wars and rumors of wars till the end of time, and we will need the courage that God commended to Joshua. We'll need that courage today and tomorrow, just as before. But what is courage? Many would say courage is the absence of fear. That may be a definition of courage, but it is not what courage really is. I recall in survival training camp in Boy Scouts when I was about 12 years old, each of us, in turn, had to crawl across the trunk of a fallen tree that spanned a deep ravine. I liked to have my feet in the ground. I was scared. That ravine was 12,000 feet deep. Well, actually, it was probably more like about 12 feet deep. But it seemed like 12,000 to me. And I trembled as I crossed it. I could hear some of the other scouts snickering. I expected to be scolded when I finished. But instead, the scoutmaster told me, "You showed real courage there. Anybody can do something he's not afraid of. It takes courage to overcome your fear and persevere." And that's the first lesson about courage. Courage is not the absence of fear. If a fighter pilot, and Mary's father was a fighter pilot, an Air Force Academy graduate, if a fighter pilot surrounded by hostile Russian MiGs that any second could send him into eternity, if he's not afraid, he's not courageous, he's out of touch with reality. And if he tells you he's never been afraid, you watch him, because he'll lie about other things too. No, courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is doing the right thing, despite your fear. Second, courage is not foolishness. The Marines especially will never leave their comrades on the battlefield. They will risk their lives by facing hostile fire to bring their men back, alive or dead. But a good Marine will not stand up in the trench with a target painted on his forehead saying, "Shoot me." There is no conflict between true courage and prudent caution. Third, courage is not looking for a fight. In martial arts, where I've had the privilege of being a student, instructor, a judge, combatant, many things, we always tell young people, walk away from a fight. Even run away from a fight, if you possibly can, even though you're taunted and ridiculed for walking away, and even though it's a fight you know you can win. Sometimes it takes more courage to walk away from a fight than it does to fight. Courage is not the absence of fear. It is not foolishness. It is not looking for a fight. And fourth, courage is not hatred. Soldiers who fight because they hate the enemy are unstable, and they either burn out quickly or make fatal mistakes. A true soldier fights out of duty, not out of hatred. He knows what he's fighting for: his loved ones, his country, his flag, his constitution, and the biblical principles that inspire them, not just what he is fighting against. You might say a true soldier fights not because he hates what is in front of him, but because he loves what is behind him. And there is also a patriotism in peace, as well as a heroism in war. Your test of courage maybe taking an unpopular political position, risking your job because you refuse to falsify statistics, not going along with a popular but immoral fashion, not laughing at an off-color joke, befriending an unpopular kid at school. But some of the most courageous people of all today may be facing daily battles for life and health as they linger in hospitals and in nursing homes. Now, you may be thinking about a time when you failed to show courage, a time when you should have spoken up for someone's aid, but you were afraid, when you should have said something, but you lost your nerve, that meeting where you kept your hands down rather than cast the lone dissenting vote. If so, consider this. One loss of nerve doesn't make you a coward. Think of the Apostle Peter, who three times denied his Lord, and then, when the cock crowed, he went out and wept bitterly. That, I suggest, was the defining moment of Peter's life. He faced himself. He saw his real self behind the bluster, and he knew that by himself, he was nothing. Drawing upon the Lord's strength, he became among the boldest of the apostles. And according to church tradition, he was crucified for his faith, upside down at his own request, because he said he was not worthy to die in the same manner as his Lord. Are you courageous? Well, like Peter, you have courage. Because courage is a choice. It's not whether you have courage. It's whether you choose to use courage. And the more you use it, the more natural to you it will become. And we will all need courage, for as Plato said, only the dead have seen the end of war. Whether domestic terrorism, foreign invasion, nuclear attack, cyber warfare, biological warfare, or threats as yet unimaginable, we will face warfare in the future. And we will draw upon the courage of those who have gone before. Again, as General MacArthur said in that farewell address, the long gray line has never failed us. Were you to do so, a million ghosts in olive drab, in brown khaki, in blue and gray, would rise from their white crosses, thundering those magic words, duty, honor, country. And now I'd like to take you to 1985. The city of Montgomery, under the leadership of Mayor Emery Fulmer, proposed to build a monument to powered flight at Maxwell Air Force Base. And he asked Lieutenant General Charles Boyd, the Air University commander, to suggest a statue of a distinguished and distinctive Air Force hero. General Boyd might have chosen General Patty James, or maybe another Air Force general like Hap Arnold, or Billy Mitchell, or Curtis LeMay. But instead, he chose a 24-year-old first lieutenant named Carl Richter. Who was Carl Richter? A 1964 Air Force Academy graduate, Lieutenant Richter flew F-105s over North Vietnam. And the common practice was that after 100 combat missions over communist territory, a pilot's duty was finished. But Lieutenant Richter volunteered for and insisted upon 100 more missions, saying that, now that I've done this, I know how to do it and I should be the one to show others. He received the Silver Star, received the Air Force Cross, and after the second 100 missions, Lieutenant Richter continued to fly and fight. But on 28 July 1967, his aircraft was shot down. He ejected, but he was badly injured as he landed upon sharp rocks. A rescue helicopter evacuated him, but before they reached the hospital, he died. On the base of Lieutenant Richter's statue, there at Maxwell Air Force Base, are the words from Isaiah 6:8. Whom shall I send? And who will go for us? Here am I. send me. And here is the final lesson of true courage. The ultimate act of true courage is to place oneself unreservedly at the command and will and service of God. And I've titled this message, The Irony of Courage, because here is the final irony. Only when we place ourselves unreservedly at the command and will and service of God are we truly safe. This Veterans Day, may God bless all who have made the ultimate sacrifice for our country. May God bless all who have served, who are serving, and who will serve. And may God bless America.